Hawaii, and he'll be joining us at 4 o'clock his time, which of course the writer's block will be on at 6 p.m. Pacific as normal. Albert's a nice guy. He works at the University of Hawaii in Honolulu, and we're going to find out all about him and ghostwriting. And then of course we have the last show of the season is of one who is a podcaster, and we don't normally, in fact, we've never had a podcaster on with just a podcast, so it ought to be interesting. So, and I want to welcome to my good friend, constant companion and co-host, Miss Bobbie Jean Bell and Albuquerque, the quirky princess from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, Bobbie Jean.
Hello, and I want to make a quick comment. We're done, but only for the year. We're back
Oh,
in 2022.
yeah. We'll be back. We're already booked through
Just
June of
want to
this year.
make it clear we are not done.
Yeah, we have to book. The bookie would kill me if I said this is the last show ever. Sam would probably shoot me too. We have, of course, tonight it's the first Thursday of December, and we have with us our ever-present, our cowboy guy himself, writer, distinguished script writer, a music critic, or not even, a movie critic, just all around good guy, Mr. Henry Park. Hello, Henry.
Well, howdy, partner. Thank you so much. Great to hear you guys again.
It's so good that
Hope
was
you
fun.
Well, I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving. The January issue of True West will be out very shortly, and it's our annual Best of the West issue. My part, of course, is writing about the best new Western films and TV shows of the year. And for me, the big shock was that with very little fanfare, there were 48 new Westerns released in 2021.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, the vast majority are available through various streaming services. Now, the only sad thing about that, of course, is that more than any other genre, a Western is always at its best seen on a big screen.
Right.
And though both will be available on Netflix, The Heart of a Fall is gone from theaters, and The Power of the Dog hasn't arrived yet. But starting Friday at theaters across the country is Michael Pfeiffer's new Western, The Last Shootout. Now, I haven't seen this one yet, but I was on set to see Bruce Dern's last day of shooting on it, and that was fabulous. There were mortars going off all over. It was great fun. Dern is also the only recognizable name in the cast, but Pfeiffer has built up a stock company of Western actors. His Catch the Bullet is currently streaming. Beautifully, beautifully shot. He did great stuff with drones. I've never seen drones used so well. And he told me all his actors are riders and wranglers first, which is good if you've ever seen the Westerns where everyone says, "Let's go," and everyone stumbles onto a horse and moves slowly out of town. These guys really know how to ride, and it's going to be playing at the Lumiere Theater in Beverly Hills, the Cinema Village in New York City, and various theaters in North Dakota, Ohio, Texas, Florida, Michigan, Nevada, Minnesota, and Alabama.
Wow.
Yeah, which is pretty good. It's a because it is a low budget film, as I say, it's a small one, but the trailer looks very good. Now, for me, the best part of Thanksgiving week, aside from the turkey, and I did not get a drumstick, was a pair of interviews that I got to do. For True West, I talked to a fine actor and such a cool guy, Bruce Boxleitner, who may be best known for his sci-fi work in movies like Tron and series like Babylon 5.
Right.
But he's had a very big career in Westerns, and he credits James Garner for his career. He also starred with Kenny Rogers in the Gambler films. And by the way,
Right.
Walmart has an exclusive collection of all the Gambler films, plus Coward of the County, for $15. It's a great deal. And if you'd like to meet Bruce, he's going to be at the LA Comic Con this weekend. Now, for the INSP blog, I got to spend a couple of hours talking with the lovely, vivacious Ruta Lee about her Westerns.
We chuckled because we chatted with her one night in the elevator at LA Talk
Oh,
Radio.
She is a hoot, isn't she?
She
She
is.
is a hoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We would see her at the Autry, same thing. She just a spitfire.
Right. Well, she started her first Western, almost maybe even her first feature, Was Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. She did Sergeants 3, which is interesting. You know, it's a Western version of Gunga Din with the Rat Pack. Bullet for a Bad Man with Audie Murphy. The Gun Hawk with Rory Calhoun. So many TV Westerns. She has a wonderful story about doing a Gunsmoke and Jim Arness accidentally knocking her out cold. She's recently published her autobiography, Consider Your Ass Kissed. That's kind of her catchphrase, not in movies, but in real life.
Yeah.
Great book title, too.
Isn't it? Yeah, you're not going to say, what is it called again? Yeah. But, and it's not a, it's a fascinating story because it's not just her showbiz career, but one of the best things is about her fight to bring her grandmother to the United States from Siberia and her, all her negotiations with the Russian government. And a week from Saturday, Ruta is going to be in Hollywood at what was the old Max Factor building, which is now the Hollywood Museum on Highland Avenue, signing her book, which, of course, is called Consider Your Ass Kissed.
Consider Your Ass Kissed.
That's right. There's actually just going to be a bunch of folks signing their books, including Kathy Garver from Family Affair and Anson Williams of Happy Days. And you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Henry. Oh, before you go, that Western I was talking to you about in 1st of November, it was Montford, the Chickasaw Rancher.
Uh-huh.
And that's on Netflix.
Yes, it is. I saw just the first few minutes, and I was already hooked. Have you seen the whole thing?
Yeah, it's very good. It's very, very, very well done.
Okay, definitely I'm going to see that. And that was if I remember right, produced by the Chickasaw Nation.
It was. In fact, the major cast are Chickasaw from the Chickasaw Nation. So it's a really well-done movie.
Terrific. I've got to catch it.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Henry.
Bye, Henry.
Okay. Bye-bye. Take care.
Okay. So we have with us tonight a fellow client of our Creative Edge publicity. He is a writer. He is he's a performer of sorts. He's a musician and he's a tango dancer. Yes, tango. And him and Robert Duvall. And we'd like to just, without a whole lot of fanfare, let's get into bringing our guest on the show with us tonight. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Gregory E. Phillips. Greg, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And we have, of course, tonight we have a guest co-host, who is sitting there, I'm sure, anxiously awaiting to say something. She's on the phone. We could not get her Skype to work. But we welcome Ms. Jennifer Liebman, and not for her first time as a guest co-host, because she will be back many times in the future. But for right now, hello, Jennifer.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you are. We are excited to have you. So I'm going to let Bobby Jean kick this off because she has a question that she wants to ask.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's really a comment, probably. This was a fantastic book. We're talking about A Season in Lights. And Greg, do you like to go by Greg or Gregory? What's best?
I prefer Gregory.
Gregory, right. Okay. Yes. Gregory, why don't you take a moment and tell us about this book briefly?
Sure. So A Season in Lights is a story of passion, ambition, and escape set in the colorful artistic underworld in off-Broadway of New York City. And I felt like there were so many stories that have been told about, you know, people making it on Broadway and the dream come true in New York City. And I wanted to show a little bit of the darker side and the side that's actually much more common of people who go there with a dream, maybe have some small successes, but don't make it big, and have this this experience that is that they end up really valuing without, you know, hitting the big time or something like that. And so this novel was actually very personal to me because that I've had a bit of a career in dance and music without becoming a big star, but I look back on many of those performances I've done, and they've been just so beautiful in retrospect. And that's kind of what I wanted to capture with this book.
Well, you did a great job.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful read from beginning to end, and a book I think actually worth revisiting. I went back and started to read it over, and the prologue made even more sense having read through the book. And it's so multi-layered and multi-stories and fully developed character. Well, they develop as the story goes along, that this is a book to read and reread.
Thank you.
It is, truly. Let's break right there. We have a real short commercial we have to get to, and we'll be right back. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block, and we'll be back right after a brief word from LA Talk Radio. You ever listen to a radio talk show and think to yourself, I could do that, or I could do that better? Well, now's your opportunity. See, LA Talk Radio has slots available Monday through Sunday, and they're all day. We're looking for hosts to fill those slots. So if you have an idea that you think translate to a radio talk show, go to latalkradio.com, find the link that says Become a Host, click on that link, and before you know it, you will be the host of your very own talk show right here on LA Talk Radio. And you'll be joining the hundreds of hosts that have got their start in radio right here at LA Talk Radio. So you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Remember, that's latalkradio.com. How to become a host. Sam Hassan will be happy to walk you through it, and you're going to be proud of what you can do as a host of your very own radio show, LA Talk Radio. And we are back with our guest, Mr. Gregory Phillips. And if you want to call and talk to Gregory, the number here is 323-203-0815. As Bobby Jean used to say, grab a pencil. 323-203-0815. Gregory, I have to say that one of my very favorite parts of this book, I fell in love with Cammy.
Thank you.
Totally fell. And let me tell you why, because not only is she a very well-written character, mm-hmm. but she's also a pragmatist. She understands the business. She understands where she is in the business, and that her chances of making it are like 40% or less. And that's, I mean, that struck home with me, of being a musician myself and you being a musician.
Yeah.
That's the best you can hope for on good days. And she understands that going to Broadway is not the cure all. It's not the answer to everything. It's her dream. You make it, you make it. If you don't, okay. We have other options. And I really like that about her. And I liked Tom. Tom was such a dichotomy in personalities that man had. He was a bad guy and a good guy, and a kind of a bad guy and a good guy. And, you know, you're not really sure where Tom's going at any one time in the book, other than the fact that he absolutely adores Cammy. Yeah. And other than that, I'm not giving away any spoiler alerts, because there are some really big ones with Tom in this book and Cammy as well. So, but I was going to let Bobby Jean ask this question. I'm going to about writing first person. And Bobby Jean, take it away.
Well, that's one of the terms of this book, is the first person. And I was curious, too, about Cammy is such a strong, actually, a number of women are so interesting. Cammy and her sister, Andrea, what a wonderful relationship. Well, what a, you know, complicated but wonderful relationship they have. What were some of the challenges for you of writing such strong women?
You know, I get that question a lot, because this is my third novel and all three of them have had female protagonists. And to be honest, I actually find for myself, it's easier for me to write female characters than male characters. And the reason for that may be complicated and many layered, but I've sort of just embraced that in my writing, because I feel that it's women relate to the women in my books very mm-hmm. strongly. Mm-hmm. In my own life, most of my close friends are women, so I feel like I understand women fairly well, and it's just something that comes fairly naturally to me, and so I've decided to just go with it.
Yeah. Jen, you're from the theater world. I mean, movies, TV, stand-up. I actually saw some of your YouTube videos. They're pretty funny. Why don't you jump in here? Jennifer, did we lose you?
Oh, no.
We can hear you.
Well, while we wait for Jennifer to come back.
Yeah.
I was thinking I would just say just a few words about how this novel came together, because it's a very interesting story, mm-hmm. because it's different than my previous two novels in several ways. So I spent a little bit of time in New York City. I live in Seattle now, but I lived there for about a year and a half. I danced in a couple of off-Broadway shows, sort of similar to Cammie's experience. And then it made sense for me to move back to Seattle, which has been my home. And so that sort of, it didn't, the novel isn't based on my experiences, but it's more inspired by it. And I had written a complete version of the novel. I felt like it was done, if a book is ever done from the author's perspective. And then March 2020, the COVID pandemic hit, and Broadway was shut down. I have so many friends in the performing arts who were so affected by this. And I thought, wow, this is something that I would like to show in fiction, what the COVID pandemic has been like for performing artists. And then I realized I have this fully formed novel about performing artists in New York City. And so I wrote a complete final third of the novel that took place in March of 2020, and I was writing it in March of 2020, literally as it was happening. And as a writer, that was such a unique experience, to be writing events literally as they're playing out on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that gave the novel a real authenticity, because while the characters don't know how the future is going to play out, neither did I as the author. And so I think in reading it, readers will feel pulled back to that time at the beginning of the pandemic of, oh my God, what is happening? How is this going to end? We don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you certainly did capture most of our feelings. Although we never were locked down as they were in New York. But we did have, you know, a rested place that don't go outside.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, wear a mask, and, you know, now it's get vaccinated. Well, okay. 1, 2, 3, you know, we're all done. But, you start this novel, and I'm going to get to you in just a minute, Jen, and you too, Bobby. You start this novel at the start of the AIDS epidemic in New York with the performers, and you move it through where the AIDS epidemic is kind of like tapered off, and we have a clean spot there before we jump into COVID-19. And I'm guessing, just guessing, mind you, this is where the title came from, A Season Under the Lights, a story in three acts. Because it certainly is, most definitely. Before I get to you, Bobby, I want Jen to jump in and give her thoughts on the character in this book.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I thought it was beautifully written. You're just such an eloquent writer, Gregory. Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure to read your work. And being a performer who lived in New York for a time, I found it very nostalgic. And I think you did such a great job at capturing the starkness of it all once the pandemic happened at the end. And the silence and the empty subway and empty streets, because, like, when you think of New York, it's so electric. And for me, I was there during the pandemic and during some of the lockdown, and it was almost chilling how evocative it was. So, and yes, Cammie, you just fall in love with her. And I wanted to say, I think one of the things that I could relate to about her and where she's at is because she knows she's not 20. She already had a failed marriage. She's at a point in her life where she goes for the experience as opposed to going for the success. Like, her pragmatism makes her, or puts her in a place where she can enjoy the journey and savor it more than somebody maybe 20, you know, who really thinks they're going to have this huge career ahead of them and they're going to be the next hot thing and, you know, everything's just going to go swimmingly.
Right, right. I like, and your comment, you have one comment in here that really hit home. Because, I mean, all of us being, well, Bobby Jean, too, was on stage in high school and college. I was, and Gregory, you were. And the thing that always struck me, and you put it in there so eloquently, was that am I a performer that is now a server, or am I a server that's going to be a performer?
Yeah, and we all know so many people who crossed that line.
You do anything to keep your art alive, won't you?
Yeah, you will.
I mean, whatever that creative passion is, if it won't pay for itself, you'll do whatever you can to keep that going. You know, one of the things that struck me too about this book is that the city of New York is a very important character in this book as well. And you really, and I have been there. I only lived there for 6 weeks one time when I was taking a class in college. But I've been there often enough to be able to lift your imagery off the paper and put myself there. And I would hope that'd be true for every reader who has not been to New York. It's so, like Jennifer said, it's so well written. But you teach us some things through your writing. One was very poignant about four levels. New York City has four levels. And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about those four levels and the importance of that gutter level in this book.
So just briefly, this was a conversation that was between Tom and the ballet teacher, Charles, early in the novel, which then Tom sort of relayed to Cammy at the very end, that there's a class system in New York City that's alive and well, and it's an economic class system. And I call it the top level, the penthouse class. Right. And they're the, you know, people who take the helicopters to work, they never see the street level chaos of the city. They're hovering above it. They're either the, you know, the financial executives or the movie stars or the super successful musicians, the socialites, what have you. Then the second class is the street level. And those are the people who are, you know, driving their cars to work, who are pretty successful, who are probably living, you know, in the affluent neighborhoods of the city or maybe the suburbs. And then the level that pretty much all of the characters in this novel are in, and that's certainly the level I was in and when I was there, is the subway class. The people who take the subway, who are hustling to just stay in the city and make enough to do what they love in New York City. And the subway class is where the color of the city is. But then there's also the gutter class, which is the homeless, the drug community, the, you know, even at the time of the early part of the story, the AIDS afflicted part of the community. And the lesson was that you're always fighting to stay just above, you're always fighting to stay in your level. And so the subway class, Tom especially, feels the gutter, as he calls it, nipping at his heels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes for interesting drama in their lives. And we all know that, you know, it's not too many of us could be very close into that level if everything came to a stop, which of course is what we see.
And that's what happened with COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Statistically, how many people are just about two paychecks away from being in a really bad situation?
Yeah.
You know, and especially when you're an artist and you're juggling your day job and your night job and probably sleeping on a couch in a basement in Queens somewhere.
Likely no health insurance. So any small thing could knock your life completely out of balance.
It amazed me that came down to
we can't quite hear you, James.
Yeah, Jim, we can't. We're losing you.
I'm sorry.
There you go. Yay!
My microphone. When it came down to dealing with Tom, Tom was, of course, he was classed as a jazz musician, but he wasn't.
No.
A classically trained jazz musician, I guess, what you can call him. And his scene, right after the botched thing the night before, when he was in the Carnegie Hall, was such a wonderful, wonderful 4 or 5 pages that I just reread them because they were so well done. And it reminded me a lot of sitting backstage, probably in a lot of the same theaters in Seattle that you've played, with the broken flooring. And, you know, we were talking the other night about, you know, boards coming up, my microphone's falling over. And, you know, as you're playing, you step on a board and it squeaks and screams at you. He's sitting there and he gets up there and he does for his singer, and then he comes back with the quartet. And his comment was, and my comment was always the same as well, why do they always sit there and tune their instruments so often when they have to come out on stage and tune to a piano B or A? And we used to have to do the same thing. You go and always tune to the piano. It doesn't matter whether the piano is out of tune. That's what you tune to.
That's an example of the kind of nuance of the performing world that I wanted to throw in there for people who haven't been there. And for me, both as a musician and as a dancer, I felt like I was able to kind of put some of those little details in that will just show some of the color of being backstage as a performer and the little idiosyncrasies, in that case of string musicians, or in earlier scenes of jazz dancers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was stunned by Tom. I felt that at towards the end of that sequence that Tom realized that this is the only chance he's ever gonna have to play in Carnegie Hall. And it's the only chance he's ever gonna have to play in front of all these thousands of people at one time. And he went for it. And it was just so cool because then the string musicians went for it too. And they gave him a show that two rehearsals and they gave him a show like that. It's just amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. It truly was. Hey, Jen, in your time in New York, do you relate anything to this at all? I mean, other than the fact that,
definitely.
Working in,
So much of it. It's, you know, even like the exchanges with the mother. and feeling torn between, you know, family being somewhere else and, you know, wanting to give yourself a shot. There's so many things. And like you said, Gregory, just like the nuance of your writing, of how people who are in the industry and in the thick of it, you know, elbows deep backstage, throwing costumes. I love the little bit about Cammy tightening her friend's straps, and if her boobs want to hang out, that's her thing, you know. And it's true. Like I've had to duct tape backstage.
For sure. Hey, look, guys. Hey, they thought we got a break for real quick, but we'll be back with you in just a minute. You're listening to LA Talk Radio, and this is The Writer's Block, and we'll be back with this very brief message from Tuscany Bay Books.
It was a dark and stormy night when she walked into my office. She had a manuscript, didn't know what to do with it. She'd finished, typed the end and all, but there was so much more she had to do. So I told her about my friends over at Tuscany Bay Books. They do all the editing, the formatting, They put a book cover on it, get the marketing done. They even have a publicist. Can't beat that in this town. So I sent her on her way to TuscanyBayBooks.com. Maybe that's where you should go too. As for me, I'm just going to sit here in my office and watch it rain.
Jennifer Lieberman, and you can call and talk to them if you like. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And I'm going to turn it over to either Bobby Jean or Jen, whoever has a question, which I'm sure they do. I'd like actually at this point kind of get into a little bit of the process. Mm-hmm. So if take it away, girls.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask because you mentioned earlier how you were writing the last third of the piece in real time and you were adapting it to what was happening with the pandemic. So how did that affect the parallel of the HIV storyline? Did you already have that written in there?
You know, that's a great question. It was already all written. The whole HIV section, the entire 1980s section of the novel was already written completely before we'd ever even heard of the coronavirus.
Because you can't write about, you know, the dance scene in the 80s in New York without addressing it.
Of course.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. And when I had this sudden burst of inspiration last March of wanting to portray COVID, I originally didn't even think of the fact that this is a parallel to the earlier section. It was just a rush of inspiration, and I wrote it in a couple of weeks, and then only afterwards we thought, wow, this is really an interesting parallel.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And the whole section of the AIDS in the 1980s, which I wrote really a couple years earlier, probably in about 2018 was when I was writing that section, was somewhat inspired by conversations with a friend of mine who, though not a dancer, was a gay man living in New York City in the 80s. And just some of the assumptions of that Charles had in the novel were drawn from my conversations with this friend of just sometimes the fatalism of living as a gay man at that time in that community. And it just really hit me so hard, and I wanted to put that into the novel. And then I, after it was written, I had him read it to kind of help me with some authenticity and give me some feedback. So that was all completely separate from writing the final section.
Yeah.
But the way the parallel came through, I thought it was really powerful and just...
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think your correlation of was it Percy and his
Percy and Jonathan?
And Jonathan having HIV plus getting COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm absolutely certain that a lot of that went on, and mm-hmm. I wondered you handled it so delicately,
mm-hmm.
but strongly. I mean, you didn't back away from it.
No.
And I appreciated that particular portion of I appreciated the entire book, but there's some spots that really not hit home, but really you appreciate the writing and the genuine feeling you have for some of these characters.
And, thank you.
And that's you're very welcome. Go ahead, Bobby.
We're talking about the characters and they are so fully developed. Did they just come fully formed? You know, they just sprung from your imagination, or did you create kind of backstories for each one and then found how to bring that backstory into the writing of that character? I think about Andrea, the sister, and even Cammy has really dark moments that feel very authentic, and they're all kind of in her head. She doesn't share them with anybody. All of these characters you also write with great love is how I also felt, even Art, you write him with love. Tell us a little bit about how you kind of kept track of them and created them.
That's a great question. And I think Cammy is really the most interesting character to speak of from the process of my creating her, because she changed and developed and became so multi-layered from the original germ of the idea to the final published character in the book. And, you know, many of those dark moments, not to give away, you know, too much of the story, because that kind of gets revealed over time. But that got revealed to me over time, too, through multiple drafts of the novel. Uh-huh. That really just, it was like she was revealing to me all of these emotions and complexities. Mm-hmm. And the other characters, to a smaller extent, had that. I think of the characters of, you know, some of the other people in the cast who were originally, I would say, sort of bit players in the first draft. People like, you know, there was Heather, there was Percy, there were all of these players who, the longer I was with them, the more they became more complex. And that was just really fun for me as the author. It wasn't that I was making them up. It was more that they were revealing themselves to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cammy comes into the kitchen quietly and catches her mom in a moment. Just experiences her mom's face, literally, you know, and has a whole, it's eye-opening for Cammy. And you wrote that so beautifully, and she has a whole different, it changes her, her perception of her mom. Yeah. And I think, you know,
and of herself too.
And of herself. And I just think that's a wonderful gift that you also, there were cinematic moments in this movie, in this book, where I felt like I could just see it on the screen, you know, but you were able to write it so well.
Yeah.
So we could see it.
I want to throw this question out to both Jennifer and Gregory. Both of you being novelists, do you find, and I almost can say, I can tell with Gregory's novel, probably this happened, but at some point when you're writing this book, did your characters take over and say, you know what, I wouldn't do that. I would do it this way, and maybe take you a little bit off your beaten path that you had set down that you wanted them to do, but they said, uh-uh, that's not going to work for me.
You know, I'll tell you, that is my favorite part of writing a novel, is when characters do that. Yep. And I, as a practice, I plan and plot out about the first third of my novel really before I write it in, you know, really detailed. Mm-hmm. The second third, maybe, you know, I kind of have an idea where it's going. And I usually don't plot out the final third of my novel at all, because by that point, the characters are going to take it in all sorts of directions, and I just want to let them do it. And that to me is so much fun. And yes, this definitely happened with this novel. I did not. You mentioned the scene with Cammy and her mom. That was not something that I plotted out in the beginning that would happen. That organically came about as I worked through Cammy and her mom's complex relationship. That became an organic scene that just came out onto the page. Yeah.
The Chopin Etude number 3 in E major plays an important role. It's a quiet, if you're not paying attention, you might, well, I don't know that you'd miss it, but I was curious, was that something that you already had in mind, or was that something that introduced itself to you? As a writer,
that one I really did have in mind from the beginning, because it is introduced in the opening chapter. And it's a piece that I've always loved. It's a piece that I like to play on the piano myself. And though that said, I originally envisioned it as it was playing out in the first chapter, and then again in about the fourth or fifth chapter, where it kind of is what brings Cammy and Tom together. not to give any spoilers, but it plays a role at the very end of the novel, which did not come to me until the moment I wrote it.
Oh, how delightful.
Jen, what about you and your characters? Did they kind of take off on their own?
Yes, definitely they do. And I agree with Gregory that one, your characters start taking over, because then it makes my job so much easier.
Yeah, we're having some technical difficulties with your cell phone, I think.
I think Jen would concur that you create a character and then they have to behave a certain way. You,
absolutely.
And you as the author, you have to go with them and
allow them, yeah.
Yeah. If you read a book that it feels like they don't, it suddenly feels inauthentic.
Exactly. It's contrived. And that, and yes,
yeah, contrived.
I agree with you. Yeah. We have to take one more break. So don't go away. Jennifer, don't hang up, even though you may be having cell phone problems. And we'll be right back with you. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. And we will be right back after this brief message from Creative Edge Publicity. Okay, you've written a book. Now, how are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They are going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, radio, podcasts, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. Why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity today at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your word, it's your work, and it's your brand. Why trust it to anyone else? And we are back. And in our last 5 minutes of the show, I'm going to let Bobby Jean ask the question.
Do you get writer's block? And if you do, what do you do about it?
Wow, that was fast.
I absolutely get writer's block. And what I do is probably not a good example, is I often have long gaps between writing, because I'm somebody who kind of believes that when the story is there to be told, it's going to pour out of me. And if it's not coming, I would rather wait for it than to try to force it. So when I have writer's block, honestly, I start reading. I read other good novels. I spend my time doing other activities that will benefit me as a writer rather than trying to force my way through. And it's, you know, when I have a sudden burst, like what happened with what became Act Three of A Season in Lights, it just comes out. And so I would rather wait for those moments, sit quietly and think about my novel rather than trying to write when it's not there.
Okay. You know, it's we're out of time, and everything just goes so fast when you're having a great conversation, and we really do appreciate you being with us, Gregory. And, you know, what's on the horizon for you? Are you working on anything special?
You know, I don't know what's going to come next yet. I have some projects that I'm, like I said, sitting quietly with right now, seeing how they're going to develop. But something else will be out there. But for the moment, I'm just, you know, enjoying working with and talking about A Season in Lights. And I hope anyone who's listening will go ahead and pick up a copy. And, you know, if you enjoy it, let me know how you like it.
Yeah, it's available through Lucid Press. Yeah.
Yes,
Amazon and all the online booksellers. It's A Season in Light, a story in three acts, or a novel in three acts. Great, great, great book. If you have not read it and you love the theater, the stage, do pick it up, because it's a creative story and very well done. And kudos to you.
Thank you.
And Jen, your book, The Year of the What? I'm going to assume that it's doing fairly well as well. Oh, there you go. Season of Lights. And how's Year of the What doing, Jennifer?
Yeah, it's doing great, actually. Thank you so much for asking. I've got some exciting. So everything's going well.
Good. Good. Glad to hear it. And even though we were having difficulties with you tonight, Jennifer, I do hope you'll come back and guest host with us again.
I would love to, and I will test my microphone and make sure everything is working.
Oh, thank you so much. And indeed, I just had to remember to turn mine on. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's Aaron, you're in Seattle, as you said, and up on Queen Anne. And oh, I love that. I love that up there. God, you guys have such beautiful houses up there. Man, and you overlook everything. So
mm-hmm. I love
a chance in your Seattle, just drive through the Queen Anne District. It's just absolutely gorgeous. It was actually Seattle's gorgeous. So they did a good job with the city, especially the underground. What a great tour. Okay, yeah. We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. And as I said, our guest next week is Albert Lanier, and he is a ghostwriter from Hawaii. He'll be with us. And, of course, that is the second to the last. And a superior announcement for everyone concerned, Mr. Russ Avison will be back with us on the 16th. And from an extended hiatus, he's finally gotten his training to move to a different day. So he's good to go, and he'll be with us on Skype as well. So that being said, for Bobby Jean and Jim Bell and myself, the bookie, we could not do this show. For our guest host, Jennifer Lieberman, of course, Sam Hassan, Richard Polinelli, and the rest of the guys at LA Talk Radio, and of course, Tuscany Bay Books, we thank you for joining us, and we are out of here. You can hang with Rick.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.